The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up.
CBS News Special Report.
It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News with Jeff Glor.
We're going to begin with our interview with the president late this afternoon.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The government shutdown drags on.
The president confirmed that he has considered declaring a national emergency to build the wall.
A new Congress convenes.
For the first time, more than 100 female House members were sworn in.
Eyes on 2020.
Elizabeth Warren becomes the first big-name Democrat to lay the groundwork for a potential presidential run.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with what still closed much of the federal government as an impasse over a funding deal drags on through this weekend while negotiations continue. Let's talk with correspondent Stephen Portnoy at the White House. Stephen, the president met with congressional leaders Friday at the White House, later taking questions from reporters, including CBS News correspondent Major Garrett.
Mr. President, Senator Schumer came out and said that the meeting, from his point of view and Speaker Pelosi's, was contentious. He also said, you said in the meeting, this is him quoting you, I just want to check, that the shutdown could go on for months or even a year or longer. Did you say that?
And I did. I did.
Is that your assessment of where we are?
That. Absolutely, I said that. I don't think it will, but I am prepared.
The issue here is that multi-billion dollar border wall the president wants to build. What options, Stephen, does the president have?
You know, where we are going to go from here remains to be seen, but also in that news conference Friday, the president confirmed that he has considered declaring a national emergency to build the wall if Congress does not appropriate new funds for the border wall specifically.
What about those 800,000 federal employees who are concerned about when they'll get paid?
The president was asked about whether they should have some kind of a safety net, and he said the safety net will be a safer border. That is going to be small comfort to the hundreds of thousands of people who work for the agencies, and not to mention the thousands more people who don't work for agencies but instead work for companies that contract with the federal government that are perhaps going on unemployment now because they can't have a guaranteed income. The president is holding the line on this. He was even asked whether he would urge landlords in the country to go a bit easier on people. Maybe it's one thing for landlords. It might be a whole other thing for banks when it comes to mortgages.
The effects of the shutdown beginning to increase. Correspondent Stephen Portnoy at the White House. Thanks, Stephen.
You bet.
Now to the other big story of the week, a new Congress.
Nancy Pelosi, I extend to you this gavel.
California's Nancy Pelosi regained the Speaker's gavel, announcing a dramatically new direction for the House after 8 years of Republican control.
Keep our sacred promise to the victims and survivors and families of gun violence and discrimination against the LGBTQ community. We must also face the existential threat of our time, the climate crisis, a crisis manifested in natural disasters of epic proportion.
Pelosi administered the oath of office to the most diverse new Congress ever. For the first time, more than 100 female House members were sworn in, including the first two Native American women and the first two Muslim women. Congress overturning a two-century ban on hats so that Minnesota's Ilhan Omar could wear her hijab on the House floor. She and 24 other new members are under the age of 40. Their youth reflected by the swarm of congressional offspring who filled the chamber.
Pelosi.
At 78, Pelosi is the first person to reclaim the speakership in more than 60 years, winning support from all but a dozen Democrats after 2 months of horse trading and policy promises.
Transparency will be the order of the day.
That there are three issues that we're going to take up right away.
Democratic committee chairs, newly vested with subpoena power, began to lay out their plans to investigate President Trump and his administration.
You know what's been happening with families separated at the border.
Democrats filed legislation to go after the president's tax returns and vowed to reopen a Russia probe House Republicans closed last year. And as special counsel Robert Mueller continues his investigation, Pelosi disputed the Justice Department's claim that a sitting U.S. president can't be indicted.
Correspondent Nancy Cordes reporting from Capitol Hill. A new year, a new campaign, Senator Elizabeth Warren is exploring for the White House.
In a New Year's Eve message emailed to supporters, Senator Elizabeth Warren becomes the first big-name Democrat to lay the groundwork for a potential presidential run.
I'm launching an exploratory committee for president.
And at a media briefing Monday, she sounded very much like a presidential candidate.
Republicans, Donald Trump, have made clear they think government should work for the wealthy and the well-connected. I think it ought to work for everyone else.
Warren is not the only U.S. senator believed to be weighing a bid. In fact, there's more than a dozen lawmakers, governors, and business leaders also said to be thinking about running. Warren, a former Harvard law professor turned U.S. senator, is urging fellow Democrats to build a network of small donors.
Since I've made the announcement, I've already received donations from all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. That's how you build a grassroots campaign.
Pocahontas? Pocahontas! How about that?
President Trump and Senator Warren have publicly sparred over her claim to Native American heritage. She even took a DNA test and publicly released the results, but that move drew criticism from some Native American organizations.
I've put it all out there. It's there for anyone to see.
With her announcement in the final hours of 2018, Senator Warren appears to be getting a jump on her competition 13 full months before the Iowa caucuses. Natalie Brand, CBS News, Washington.
Meanwhile, President Trump is taking aim at another senator, Mitt Romney.
Incoming Senator Mitt Romney wrote in the Washington Post that the president has not risen to the mantle of the office. He said he will support Trump policies that he agrees with, but will speak out against significant statements or actions that are divisive, racist, sexist, anti-immigrant, dishonest, or destructive to democratic institutions. On CNN, Romney said he spoke out in response to recent controversies.
The departure of Secretary Mattis and the decision to pull out of Syria in the abrupt way that it was done was a precipitating event.
President Trump responded during a cabinet meeting.
Well, I wish Mitt could be more of a team player. If he fought really hard against President Obama, like he does against me, he would have won the election.
Mr. Trump endorsed Romney's presidential bid in 2012, but Romney didn't return the favor in 2016.
Donald Trump is a phony, a fraud.
The pair seem to reconcile after Mr. Trump's election, meeting twice to discuss Romney serving as Secretary of State. Now, Mr. Trump's allies wonder whether Romney's positioning himself for a 2020 primary challenge to the president, something Romney denies.
I'm not sure what Mitt Romney's trying to accomplish. It's kind of sad.
I don't know how it really helps anybody's cause for people to stand up there like they're holier than thou.
Even Romney's own niece, the Republican National Committee Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel, called the comments disappointing and unproductive. Another RNC official called what Romney did calculated political treachery and said that party leaders should unanimously move to nominate Mr. Trump now as the party's nominee ahead of a potential 2020 primary challenge. Ed O'Keefe, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Coming up, why an American is being jailed in Russia. That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
The State Department is pressing Russia for more information about the arrest of American Paul Whelan. He's now being held in solitary confinement there, charged with espionage. More from correspondent Jan Crawford.
The 48-year-old former Marine, now head of security for a Michigan auto parts company, was arrested at the historic Metropole Hotel in Moscow. Russian media said he was found with a thumb drive and charged with trying to recruit Russians who could provide government secrets. His brother David said he was in Russia for a friend's wedding.
It's inconceivable to all of us that he could be considered a spy for any government against the Russians.
Whelan's Russian lawyer called his arrest senseless and baseless. He said Whelan does not speak Russian well and has asked for an English-speaking cellmate, as well as a change of clothes and a toothbrush. Former Deputy CIA Director Mike Morrell, CBS News national security contributor, said Whelan had been unwittingly swept up in the spy wars.
I have high confidence that Paul Whelan is not a U.S. intelligence officer. The United States does not send intelligence officers to Russia without diplomatic protection. So I'm pretty confident he's not.
What's most likely is Whelan's a pawn in Russia's play to get back one of its spies, Maria Butina, now in prison in the U.S. for espionage.
The Russians want her back, and they need to create a situation where they can offer a swap. And Mr. Whelan is that person, it seems to me.
Jan Crawford, CBS News, Washington.
Also in Russia, the death toll from a building collapse Monday in an industrial city stands at more than 36.
Careful, careful, rescuers shout. Then, cradled in their arms, 10-month-old baby Vanya, alive, after being buried 35 hours in temperatures that dipped to 4 below zero. After a quick injection, the race for life begins. Let's go, they yell. Run, run. Rushing him to a local hospital, he was transferred to a hospital in Moscow. The rescue came after a portion of this building collapsed from an explosion blamed on a natural gas leak. Magnitogorsk is a major steel-producing city, a city now saddened. My colleague died, she says, a young woman, now gone. Vanya may be alive because he was in a crib wrapped in blankets. Russian officials warn that he's in serious condition, but he has a whole nation praying that he will survive, that miracles really do happen. Barry Peterson, CBS News, London.
A warning for Americans traveling to China.
That warning comes after China detained 13 Canadians a month ago. The U.S. says China has arbitrarily kept Canadians and other foreign nationals from leaving the country, and the Chinese authorities have threatened and harassed American citizens of Chinese descent. The U.S. has not said don't go there, but Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says travelers should know the risks if they do. China says the warning is unwarranted, that it always welcomes foreign visitors. Peter King, CBS News.
Reports say a North Korean official in Europe has defected.
North Korea's top diplomat in Italy, its acting ambassador, has gone into hiding with his wife, and it appears to be a defection, according to South Korea's spy agency. Yeo Sung-jil has been missing since November, shortly before he was due to return home. There are unconfirmed reports Yeo has sought asylum from an unidentified Western country. A defection at this high level would be a huge embarrassment for North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Larry Miller, CBS News.
Stock spiked following the latest jobs report Friday. Here's chief economist at PNC Financial Services Group in Pittsburgh, Gus Fauché.
The U.S. economy added 312,000 jobs in December. The unemployment rate rose from 3.7% in November to 3.9% in December, but it actually rose because there were more people looking for work. So that's good news. We saw average wages rise 0.4% for the month. That's a nice big increase.
Also on Friday, Fed Chair Jerome Powell told a crowd he wouldn't resign amid criticism from President Trump following interest rate hikes. To Colorado now, where a judge has arraigned a man accused of killing his fiance.
Patrick Frazee entered the courtroom in prison stripes, where he was charged with two counts of first-degree murder in the case of his missing fiance. District Attorney Dan May explained even though there's just one victim, he filed two charges for two different theories.
One is deliberation murder, and the other is felony murder. Felony murder in this case, as set out in the charge, is that when you rob somebody and they die during the robbery, that is also first-degree murder.
32-year-old Frazee is also charged with three counts of solicitation to commit murder, meaning he's accused of trying to hire someone to help kill 29-year-old Kelsey Barrett, the mother of his one-year-old daughter. Barrett hasn't been seen since this Thanksgiving shopping trip. Investigators have been trying to find her cell phone, which pinged almost 600 miles away outside Gooding, Idaho, 3 days after she vanished. Detectives in nearby Twin Falls executed search warrants, but did not say what evidence was recovered. Frazee has been held without bond since his arrest 10 days ago, while investigators continue to search for Barrett's body.
Obviously, everybody it was hopeful how this would end. Unfortunately, we are filing two counts of first-degree murder. Evidence suggests at this point those charges are appropriate.
Prosecutors will present evidence and testimony on January 29th. Once Frazee enters his plea, the DA will decide whether to seek the death penalty. Nikki Batiste, CBS News, Cripple Creek, Colorado.
new concerns about car seats, according to new research.
Here we go.
For Samantha Booth,
let's get you buckled.
The safety of her children is a priority. All three of her children used this car seat.
I never really thought anything of it because we used it for about a year for each kid. I'd never been in a car accident. It was in good shape. And so I just reused it.
Just one problem. She didn't know it was already a year past its expiration date when she used it for her son, Nathaniel.
I was, shocked, but also relieved, surprised, oh gosh, I felt really guilty that I'd had my youngest in an expired car seat.
Improper use of car seats is common. According to Safe Kids Worldwide, 3 out of 4 car seats are used incorrectly. That includes the use of expired car seats. Many of them are unknowingly bought and sold at garage sales or handed down from family members and friends.
So you shouldn't be passing it down from kid to kid to kid to kid and then passing it on to the neighbor.
Correct.
Kristen Urso is a car seat expert with the American Academy of Pediatrics.
In general, we're looking at a 6-year expiration, and that is from the manufacture date, not the purchase date or the date you start using it.
You can find the expiration date on the bottom of your car seat. Look for the sticker that has the manufacture date and the do not use after date. Manufacturers put expiration dates on car seats because the plastic they're made of can break down over time.
All right.
Susan Copen for CBS News, Pittsburgh.
Up next, exploring the unknown.
A frozen world 1 billion miles beyond Pluto.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio presents the Intelligence Matters Podcast, taking you inside the biggest stories in national security.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned that the Russians never left.
Each week, former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, interviews top leaders from the U.S. intelligence community.
James Clapper, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, Mike Hayden.
And lucky for you, you won't need a security clearance to listen. The Intelligence Matters Podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
A North Carolina animal sanctuary is investigating how a lion attacked and killed a worker there.
This is the lion named Makai that killed 22-year-old Alexandra Black at a rural North Carolina animal refuge. The 14-year-old male escaped what's described as a secure area as the intern and another worker cleaned his habitat Sunday. Alex Black was 22, a recent graduate of Indiana University with dreams of being a zookeeper. She loved animals and had worked at the facility just 10 days. Dana Drenzik says Alex was a natural when she interned at Wolf Park in her home state of Indiana.
Could be snowing or raining, and if she needed to go out and do her job, not a problem. She was happy to do it.
Her family says she died following her passion. Lieutenant Daryl McLean of the Caswell County Sheriff's Office said officers had no choice but to take the animal's life.
There were multiple attempts by the conservator staff to tranquilize this animal, multiple attempts to no avail.
Shelters like Conservators Center aren't regulated by the AZA, which accredits zoos, but they are licensed with the USDA under the Animal Welfare Act. Jennifer Ireland of the North Carolina Zoo in Asheboro says protocols are in place there to ensure security.
When we work with dangerous animals such as lions, we always have 2 people making sure that all the locks are locked, that all the proper doors are closed, and that all the people are accounted for before we move animals into spaces or before we enter any space that an animal was just in.
The center houses 80 animals, including 14 other African lions. It is closed indefinitely, pending that internal investigation. Its workers shattered by grief. Janet Shamlian, CBS News, Burlington, North Carolina.
A zoo near Orlando is under investigation after a 2-year-old girl apparently entered a white rhino exhibit. Correspondent Manuel Bajorquez has more from the Brevard Zoo.
Keith Winston is the zoo's executive director.
We think at least one of them probably made contact with her snout, and then mom hurt her arm pulling the baby out.
A child's shoe could be seen in the enclosure after her parents plucked her out and crews rushed her to the hospital. In a statement, the family said she is now doing well. Winston says it's the first time in the rhino encounter's 9-year history something like this has happened.
Is there pressure for zoos to make exhibits more interactive in order to keep visitors coming in?
Pressure, I think, is the wrong idea. In today's world, where kids spend so much time on technology when they're rarely outside, really it's our duty to get people connected with nature.
But clearly here, something might have to change.
I think we can make it better. We always can.
The Rhino Encounters program has been suspended while officials review safety procedures. They tell us the rhinos involved were not harmed and will not be euthanized. Manuel Bojorquez, CBS News, Melbourne, Florida.
Meanwhile, one family's pet badly burned by a California wildfire is getting pioneering new treatment. Here's correspondent Jamie Yukis.
When the campfire broke out in Paradise, Mindy and Curtis Stark were 3,000 miles away from their 8-year-old Boston Terrier mix, Olivia.
I can't imagine what she saw or what she did.
Did you think that Olivia was gone?
Oh, yeah.
I thought she perished. Yeah. We really expected the worst because no one could get to her.
Their house was left in ashes. Police finally found Olivia nearly a week later. The Starks reunited with their dog at a local clinic, but she was severely burned.
She had such extensive injuries, not only to her paws, but her sides, second and third degree burns. So, you know, it was quite painful for her.
So Jamie Payton at the UC Davis Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital decided to treat Olivia in a highly unusual way, with fish skins. She attached tilapia skins packed with high levels of collagen to the wounds, allowing them to heal better and faster while reducing the need for painful bandage changes.
It provides protection and pain relief, covering all those open nerve endings, as well as providing an area for the skin cells to actually grab on and move across to help heal a wound.
Payton initially used fish skins to treat bears and a mountain lion burned in wildfires, but this is the first time the procedure has been performed on pets.
There hasn't been a true standard of care for treating burns in veterinary medicine. We have to find better ways to treat these patients.
Weeks later, Olivia's wounds are healing.
We see our dog now. She's got her personality back. It took a layer off the sadness.
Giving hope to the Starks and their beloved pooch as they all gradually get back on their feet. Jamie Yukis, CBS News, Oroville, California.
Expect to pay more at the pharmacy this year.
Higher prices on hundreds of drugs. The average increase more than 6%. Allergan raising the price of dozens of its drugs nearly 10%. Some of the steepest price rises affect some generics, which account for 9 out of 10 prescriptions in the U.S. Drug makers are citing all sorts of rationales. But despite growing political pressure to keep costs to consumers down, the Wall Street Journal notes drug price rises continue to exceed inflation. Vicki Barker, CBS News.
The far-flung New Horizons space probe is sending back new images of the celestial body Ultima Thule with the backing of a superstar.
A frozen world 1 billion miles beyond Pluto.
This is part of what went into this amazing success of being.
It astounded the New Horizons science team, including PhD astrophysicist Brian May.
You're seeing an object here which has been untouched since the dawn of the creation of the solar system.
Hello.
Dr. May, a Sir Isaac Newton lookalike, is also this Brian May.
Open your eyes.
Co-founder and lead guitarist of Queen, the iconic British rock band. Rocket scientist by day, rock star by night.
Different kind of rocks.
Bigger thrill. Yeah. Live Aid, Wembley Stadium. Or these photos of Ultima Thule.
You can't do that to me. I'm happy to be here right now. That's all I can say. It's amazing. And the whole trip with New Horizons is such a privilege for me.
May wrote this anthem for New Horizons' flyby of Ultima Thule.
No one's ever seen before.
A tribute to a glimpse beyond our solar system.
I didn't imagine that it could happen.
And now it has. Another one bites the dust. Mark Strassman, CBS News, Laurel, Maryland.
New backlash to Louis C.K., as CBS News correspondent Deborah Rodriguez reports from New York.
Jim Carrey doesn't think much of fellow comedian Louis C.K.'s stand-up criticizing survivors of the Parkland school shooting.
Because you went to a high school where kids got shot? Why does that mean I have to listen to you? How does that make you interesting? You didn't get shot. You pushed some fat kid in the way.
Carrey's tweeted a sketch of Stoneman Douglas student Emma Gonzalez towering over a stick figure of Louis C.K. The caption reads, "Louis can't see. K." Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, being better in 2019.
I'm saying just become better.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Civil rights activists are fighting for a teen girl whose SAT score is being withheld.
18-year-old Camila Campbell of Miami thought she did everything she could to improve her SAT score from 900 to over 1,200. But then she received a letter from the testing company saying her score was invalid.
They tell you that you need to practice and work and study to do better, but then when you do better, they question it.
The Educational Testing Service, which oversees testing for college entrance exams, told Campbell that her score is under review because of discrepancies on her answer key.
Because it improved for over 300 points, so they're saying I improved basically too much, and that's skeptical for them.
Campbell credits her more than 300-point improvement with months of studying, tutors, and a free online SAT prep program.
They're not looking at it as if maybe she studied, maybe she focused and dedicated herself to passing this test.
Campbell says she missed the deadline to apply for her first-choice Florida State University, and she cannot apply for some scholarships without her latest SAT score. Her attorney, Benjamin Crump, is considering a lawsuit.
We intend to fight for the legitimacy of Camila's test scores.
Despite the setback, Campbell remains hopeful.
I'm proud of myself, and I need my scores released.
Education Testing Services told us they don't cancel scores based solely on a point increase. They say other factors, which they won't disclose, are taken into account. If the testing service does not validate the score after its review, well, Campbell may have to retake the test. Jerika Duncan, CBS News, New York.
It's a new year. Is it a new you? Well, David Goggins doesn't think it should be. The former Navy SEAL, ultra runner, and motivator thinks you should be true to yourself as you set goals for 2019.
We all wake up. For me, I shave my head. Some people shave their face. Women, they do their hair. They do their makeup. Somebody, you're always in front of a mirror. And that mirror doesn't lie because that's your reflection. We can lie to the public. We can lie to everybody else. It's hard to lie to yourself in that accountability mirror. So basically what that is a total accountability of yourself on what you've done, but mostly what you haven't done and what you've put off. And on my accountability mirror when I was growing up, I basically put these small goals on that thing, just trying to change who I was. I blamed a lot of people for where I was at. A lot of people had a lot to do with my childhood, my upbringing, all these things. But now it's mine to own. They're not coming back to help me. They're not coming back to fix this stuff. So that accountability mirror was like, okay, only that person in that mirror is going to fix this. So that's where it starts at. It starts at with you being honest, brutally honest with who you are as a person. And from there, you can own it. And once you own it, you can start fixing it.
Goggins speaking with CBS News in New York as he helps folks craft what motivates them by confronting what's uncomfortable.
Darkness for some people is maybe you or an addict, or maybe you were abused as a kid. So this thing called the cookie jar that I made up is basically we've all overcome obstacles, whether they be big or small. But when you're confronted with an obstacle, what happens is you forget that you are special. You forget that you overcame other obstacles when you're confronted with this obstacle right now. So the cookie jar is basically take a second to come out of that obstacle that you're in right now. Take a second. Get out of it. Whatever it may be, take a second to relax. Calm your mind down because your adrenaline, your nerves, your anxiety is all going crazy. And you can't think properly when your mind's going crazy. Come out of it. Come out of it. Sit down for a second. Just relax and reflect on how many things in your life you've overcome. And then once you realize, okay, this isn't as big as I made it out to be because why? I went through heart surgery. I went through this, overcame bullying, overcame a bad childhood, overcame, you know, learning disability, whatever it may be. We all have a story. Remember your story and use your story as fuel in these dark times. That's the cookie jar. Go back in there and remember who you are.
Goggin's story in his new book, Can't Hurt Me, Master Your Mind and Defy Your Odds.
Not many people are me. That's why you have to tell people what the norm is. I'm not, if I were to come out here right now and say, hey, I was 300 pounds. I hated the water. I was insecure, could barely read and write, and I'm going to go be a Navy SEAL. That right there alone turns people off. I can't, what's going on here? So I don't want to turn people off. That's my story. My story is I got so far into a dark hole that I had to come out of it like an animal. And the only way to come out of my hole was to literally pick the deepest, darkest, nastiest thing I could do and overcome it. Not many people are there. Not many people want to be there. So I'm working with people who just want to, I want you to become better. I'm not saying become Goggins. You know, don't run 200 mile races. I'm not saying that. I'm saying just become better.
Staying true to yourself in 2019 and building something better. Our thanks to our Jonathan Clark for his help with David Goggins. Now to the story of one woman with a sky-high goal for herself.
This is Marguerite.
Hello.
Marguerite Miller is about to be granted her highest wish.
We're going to be going up to almost 13,000 feet.
Oh, okay.
At age 90, she's going skydiving.
I was hoping it was high enough so I can stay up there as long as possible.
Excellent.
She has wanted to do this since she was a teenager, when she first witnessed bravery during World War II.
I just remember those days.
Yeah, we lived in Normandy. Our house was bombed down. We lost everything.
Marguerite, her mother, and her mother's friend risked their lives as part of the French resistance to the Nazis. They saved 17 members of the Allied forces, including 8 U.S. airmen, by hiding them in their apartment after the men were shot down.
When they were shot down over Paris, we'd see some coming down in parachutes, you know. And then afterwards, we had the stories of all the airmen that we had in our apartment told us that how they escaped.
Yeah. Is there one that you remember?
Oh, all of them. All of them. And we found out they all arrived back safe in this country.
And now it was Marguerite's turn to experience what it feels like to parachute out of a plane.
I wanted to experience, feel like what my husband experienced and lots of the airmen that we had.
Her husband, Ed Miller, was an American airman who was also shot down over France during the war. Now, 74 years after Allied airmen parachuted in to liberate her homeland, she floats freely above the United States of America, which today is her home.
What are we to take away from what you and your mother did?
Well, you must always help your country as much as you can and be proud. It was wonderful.
David Begnaud, CBS News, Homestead, Florida.
Thank you. Thank you.
Coming up, why you may pay more to visit an Italian icon.
Italy's new law allows Venice to tax those who only come for the day.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
What we want to try to do is give the American people the truth.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. He has keys to the universe.
Actually, it's a key fob.
Right. You have a fob to the universe. Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
A Texas man whose son tried to order a hitman to kill him is now trying to save him from the death penalty. That's what 48 Hours correspondent Peter Van Sant is reporting on this weekend. Peter's in New York. Peter, what happened on December 10th, 2003 in Sugarland, Texas?
It's something that you can't make this stuff up. A member of a family decides to approach his college roommate with an idea. I want you to kill everyone in my family, and then I also want you, at the end of this, to shoot me in the arm so it looks like I was being attacked too. I just managed to survive. So on a night in which the family goes out in Sugarland, Texas, which is near Houston, to celebrate their son's graduation from college, they come home about 9 o'clock at night. The brother, 19-year-old brother Kevin, he approaches the front door first. Bang, they hear. Down he goes. The mother's right next to him. Bang, Trisha, down she goes. She was 51. Kent Whitaker, the father, runs up. Bang, he is shot. And then Bart says the sons that he chased after this attacker, and he is shot in the arm. It takes months for authorities to finally figure out that this wasn't a burglary gone bad, but rather an assassination attempt, that Bart Whitaker at the time was 25 years old, that he had hired someone to kill his family so, according to prosecutors, he could inherit the family's estate.
What is Kent Whitaker now doing?
Kent today lectures around the country. He is an accountant, but he talks about forgiveness because, remarkably, as he lay in a hospital bed with his son next to him, not knowing that that son was the one that had arranged the mass murder of his family, he forgave who had done this. He says, I forgive that person. And Bart ends up living with his father for 7 months. And authorities, as their investigation progresses, they come to Kent Whitaker, the dad, and they say, we think your life's in danger because we think your son is behind this. The son ends up fleeing to Mexico, and the FBI gets involved. They eventually find him, and he's brought back and convicted and sentenced to death in Texas. But the dad says, I can't take my last family member to be killed. So he fights for his son's life. It is a remarkable story of forgiveness versus what the family sees the survivor as state vengeance.
What's the outlook that his son then will be spared the death penalty?
Well, what we're talking about at this point is the appeal has been made. It went before the Texas Board of Parole. And it comes down in this case within the day that he's supposed to be executed. Father Kent comes to visit his son for the last time. And then we'll have to find out when we watch whether or not a phone call comes in that stops this. It comes right down to the last moment, and it's high drama.
48 Hours correspondent Peter Van Sant on the Weekend Roundup. You can watch 48 Hours Saturday nights on CBS or stream it anytime on CBS All Access. Thanks again, Peter.
Thank you.
Venice is ushering in a new tax on day trippers to the iconic city. More from correspondent Seth Doan.
Think Venice. Both canals and crowds come to mind.
We're all kind of surprised seeing how many tourists there are in the winter.
In fact, locals say the city is losing its soul.
The vast majority of tourists here are day trippers who do not spend the night. That means hotels do not collect taxes for the city. But Venice still has to deal with all of the maintenance of this fragile place.
Italy's new law allows Venice to tax those who only come for the day. At peak times, they'll pay up to 10 euros, about $11.50. The money would go towards keeping the city clean, Venice's mayor said. While some argue the city should be free for everyone, Venetians told us they're concerned about the daily deluge of visitors, some coming on giant cruise ships. We've seen protests by residents who are outnumbered by tourists, around 50,000 compared to an estimated 80,000 daily visitors.
We have many, many, too much tourists.
Too many tourists?
Yes.
That's Paola Marr, who's in charge of managing tourism for the city. Beautiful. Before the law passed, she told us visitors are essential, but the city has reached a breaking point. We want to treat tourists with respect, Marr told us, but we want respect. We found Americans sympathetic and undeterred.
Would you pay that tax?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wouldn't think twice about it?
Nope. Came this far. Cost me a lot more to get here than 10 euros.
It is not clear when or how this tourist tax will be implemented. What is certain is that other cities trying to manage this crush of tourists, like Florence, will be watching closely. Seth Doan, CBS News, Venice.
Finally this weekend, hello, 2019, goodbye to straws and food containers as states usher in new laws.
California voters put teeth into a push that fined homes for rescue animals. Pets sold at retail stores must now be from nonprofit adoption organizations, not puppy mills. Also in California, publicly held corporations must now include at least one woman on the board. And workers are no longer required to sign a non-disclosure agreement as part of a sexual harassment case.
So many different people were told that they would have to have sexual relationships in order to advance themselves, and that is just disgusting.
20 states raised the minimum wage, in some places to as much as $15 an hour, lifting pay for 5.3 million workers across the country. The federally mandated minimum wage remains $7.25. Foam food containers are banned in New York City. Plastic straws are banned in D.C. Fake service animals are banned in Washington State. If you're caught riding a bike wearing headphones in the nation's capital, expect a $50 fine. If you identify as neither male nor female in New York City, you can change the gender designation on your birth certificate to X. The road, named for Confederate President Jefferson Davis in Virginia, has seen its identity changed to the Richmond Highway. And in an effort to staunch a dwindling population, Vermont is offering $10,000 to anyone willing to identify themselves as a new resident.
In Hawaii and Connecticut, it is now illegal for employers to ask their prospective hires about their pay history. In Illinois, you can now wear blaze pink as well as blaze orange if you're a hunter. And in New Hampshire, the marital consent age is now 16, up from 13. Don Daler, CBS News, New York.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show is always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.